Let me ask again, as Mr. Sturtz has indicated, that you do remember in prayer. Since before leaving New Orleans last week, I've been battling one of these laryngitis bugs. You know, we had a terrible cold wave down in our place. It got down to 52. That's not below zero. Now, seriously, we had three straight days of some freezing weather, and I began to pick up one, and it hasn't gone too well, but it hasn't gone too bad. To have a man like Jim Sturtz as a friend is one of life's extras. A man with those strong Teutonic feet of his planted firmly on the earth and of the earth earthy, but yet with the vision of the heavenlies as a constant inspiration. You're fortunate to have him as your pastor. And I can envy you having this refreshing opportunity of being around him, and only regret that I get to see him so seldom. This morning, we direct our attention to another part of the proclamation of God's good news, the good news of release to the captives. And our scriptural basis is in the Gospel of John, chapter 8, verses 31 through 38, with this verse as our point of departure. If you continue in my words, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. In a museum in Florence, Italy, are some pieces of marble on which sculpturing work had been started by the immortal Michelangelo, but which he never finished. Partial figures of human beings chiseled out of rock, but the great artist not completing his work. Significantly enough, these pieces of stone are called the prisoners. For in the marble are human forms waiting to burst forth in all of the beauty of their promise. All they needed was the master's touch to set them free, but they remain forever imprisoned. Here we see a parable of so much of today's world. It harkens back to a scene in the Old Testament where an enslaved people dreamed dreams of a promised land. So long had they waited for that their dreams seemed only a futile figment of an ancient past dimly remembered. But to one man among them, that dream of freedom became an obsession, and he felt the definite call of God upon him to be the one to lead his people from their bondage. So one day he stood before the Pharaoh of Egypt, the world's mightiest man, and uttered words which from that time has served as a symbol of all who want to be free. Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, let my people go. In like manner, some 2,000 years ago, another man with the call of God upon him stood and said, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has sent me to proclaim release to the captives. One has but to take a casual look at today's world to be impressed by the longings for deliverance by people long held in various forms of bondage. And if we were to choose a symbol for today's imprisonment, what better choice could we select than that of a wall? A wall stretching from Berlin into Russia, across China into North Korea, and down between the Vietnams. A wall built not to keep invaders out, but to keep their own people in. Something unheard of. The almost weekly pictures that we have seen in recent years in our news magazines and on daily television show us one kind of revolt after another. This one against communism, as in Hungary a short time ago. This one against some form of colonialism, as in Africa. This one against some kind of a local tyranny, as in Saudi Arabia, or at a bridge in Alabama. Let us realize that these are more than commercial photographs or put together newsreels, and this has happened. These pictures are true symbols of a world seething in unrest, struggling in the grip of terrifying forces, prisoners wanting to be set free, captives desirous of liberty, needing the master's touch for release. When men will stand and fight a modern military tank with sticks and stones, there is a haunting, burning desire for self-determination which will not be satisfied with a crust of bread or a bowl of rice or a sports stadium or a highway. As in Jakarta, Indonesia, for example, the Russians build a magnificent sports stadium and the United States builds the highway to get there, unmindful of so many of the more desperate needs of the people. These are people suffering from a hunger which bread cannot satisfy. Whose emotions were not stirred some time ago by pictures of a giant Russian tank bearing down upon men armed only with rocks? But do we not feel that deep within such dauntless men is a power that ultimately will crush that tank? I feel that way, and I remember a verse from the Bible which says, "It is not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord." Sticks and stones do break bones. When the spirit of man desires freedom, that freedom must be his, and we have seen it proved too many times for us to be otherwise. Do you remember, some of you do, and you have read it, others of you younger ones, British armies rushing in against Gandhi in India some 30 years ago? Gandhi, unarmed except for a spirit of a nonviolent resistance, a dauntless desire, and the moral support of the world, he looked futile in his frailty. Yet, he won India's independence. Now, of course, Britain's Christian heritage rebelled at the wanton killing of unarmed, and this deserves an assist at this point. And those without the Christian heritage do not mind mass murder to keep their control. I remember, too, what we Americans call the spirit of 76, when our fathers stood against England, at that time the world's greatest power, and demanded their liberty. What casual observer would have ever dreamed that that ill-equipped group of colonialists could withstand the might of England and wrest from her their independence? But there was a spirit in those men and women, and that spirit would not be denied. In 1955, that first conference of the non-aligned nations met in Bandung, Indonesia, the United States government did not send an observer there because there was the fear that the conference might have some communist overtones. The keynote address of that conference began with these words: "We have convened here on the 179th anniversary of the midnight ride of Paul Revere." I also remember a man named Jesus nailed to a cross by the power of the Roman Empire, ruler of the world then. Helpless he looked hanging there. But John Masefield, in his drama The Everlasting Mercy, had one of the Roman soldiers speak words which memorialized what happened there. "He is a force let loose in the world. Christ. A force let loose in the world, a force which cries out for men to be released from captivity, for man to be liberated from himself, to be free from his sin, to be released from all of his fellows who would subject him to any kind of enslavement. Some time ago, Life magazine gave an entire issue of its magazine to Africa entitled Continent in Ferment. And in that issue was a descriptive sentence, Africa has conceived of liberty and freedom is waiting to be born. That phrase, freedom waiting to be born, is descriptive of the entire world, not just Africa. The Middle East, the Orient, much of South America, the islands of the sea, so that in the last 18 years, some 50 new nations have been born into the commonwealth of the world. On the campus of Yale University, in the center of the old quadrangle, stands Connecticut Hall, one of the original buildings of the university. And in front of Connecticut Hall stands a statue erected to what some of us sons of old Eli like to think is one of our typical students. Young Nathan Hale stands there with one memorable sentence of his etched not just in stone, but embedded in the breast of those who love freedom as a sacred trust. I only regret that I have but one life to give for my country, he said. What kind of a country was it that called forth such sentiment from that young man and thousands like him? Well, how long has it been since you or I have read the foundation principles upon which our country is built? Ah, July 4th, 1776, when immortal words penned by men to whom the principle of freedom meant more than life itself, words let loose as a force in the world. And today we are so used to them that we forget their impact on our fathers and on our brothers of the world. It sounds so good what our fathers did, but we must never forget, nor must we deny this same privilege to others, for other people read those words and they dream those dreams for themselves. Listen again. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which compel them to separate. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Congress shall make no laws respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievance. What a day in history it was when such principles became the governing code of a people, and how great must have been the celestial rejoicing of such men as John Huss and Galileo and Martin Luther and Roger Williams, for these men paid sacrifice for the enunciation of such principles. Our heritage of freedom has cost us nothing, oh, except some taxes and some military service. But it cost them and others like them, even today, for the heritage of self-government must be continually rebought. Eternal vigilance is the price of freedom, For there have always been and always will be those who would by tyranny deny others their liberty. But what has happened to our dream? Over most of the area of today's world, freedom is denied to the billions of our people. 1/3 of the total population, we are told, is dominated by communism. Many other people live under some other form of a totalitarianism, political or ecclesiastical, where they are not free to express thoughts of their own. And even in America, this beloved land of the free, the dread specter of a despotic tyranny has stalked among us and created fear and distrust. Within the past decade of our lives, we have experienced witch hunting, book burning, thought control, guilt by association, accusation with no chance to face one's accusers, and suppression of free speech and ideas. Such activity took a turn at one point in our recent past so that, humorously, we got to the place where we were afraid to read such stories as Little Red Riding Hood or The Little Red Hen. And we had a chicken broiler raiser up in North Louisiana who sent in his order for baby chicks specifying, "No Rhode Island Reds, please." Well, back in 1636, there was a Rhode Island Red named Roger Williams. And he rebelled against such tyranny in the name of non-interference, and his colony became the first in all history to guarantee the principles of human liberty. Seriously, these travesties on our concept of freedom are a threat, and we are becoming suspect in our world and losing the place of leadership as the world's stronghold of freedom. The people of the world look to us with yearning eyes, but they view our own inner turmoil with an alarm, because it is so much like their own recent disturbances that they are afraid. There are those who say that the communists are responsible for the world's unrest, and undoubtedly the communists do stir up foment and unrest. But this is a struggle which goes deeper than communism. Some among us have even used the mystical numbers of the Book of the Revelation to identify Nikita Khrushchev as the beast. And now we're having to change our numerology a little bit to identify others. Why, in my own lifetime, I have seen those numbers used to identify Hitler and Mussolini and Stalin and Germany and Italy and General Hugh Johnson of the NRA and the first administration of Franklin Roosevelt, and even at Yale, one mean professor was identified by making the letters of his name come out with a 666. But Mr. Khrushchev and these others have left the scene now, and others must be chosen in such a realm. In Indonesia, for example, the Dutch battled for years before communism entered the picture. And let us not overlook the great contribution that Christian missions makes and has made in these desires for men to be free. I believe and wish I could have discussed in another section that I feel that Christian missions is the greatest single cause for this desire of men to be free in our world. I'm totally unwilling to let communism get away with taking credit for this desire of freedom. Man's freedom is a gift of God. Our forefathers recognized that in saying that we are endowed by our Creator with the unalienable right of liberty, and we must not and we dare not let communism or anyone else get away with taking credit for this. An acquaintance of mine recently made a medical tour of Africa, and he used this descriptive illustration. All over Africa, he says, is the vulture has free run, and there is no effort to suppress the vulture, for he acts as a scavenger agent. Wherever disaster strikes, the vulture swoops in to clean up the carnage. Thus he profits from the tragedy of others. This acquaintance compared communism to that vulture with one addition. Wherever there is unrest and tragedy among the people of the world, communism sweeps in to take advantage of the situation for their personal gain, but where the vulture merely circles and waits, communism gets in to help bring on the disaster. But what kind of freedom is it that the world desires? Again, I wish I could discuss this in more detail, but just a brief summary. First, they want a political freedom that will release them from political tyranny. Imperialism and colonialism are outmoded relics of a past, and people want to govern themselves. As one said, we want to be free to make our own mistakes. Next, they want an economic freedom that will enable them to share in their own natural resources, oil and rubber and minerals and coffee and the like. I feel they want a capitalism, but they do not want a continuation of extractive capitalism. The poverty of the world is intense, unbelievable, and some of you have lived there and know. They feel they should be benefiting from their own resources, and why not? With our own concept of free enterprise, why should we not support them in their dreams? Or is it free enterprise for us only? In my own state of Louisiana, perhaps the richest in the nation in natural resources, did you know we're the biggest fur-producing state in the nation, for example? And we put depletion taxes on our sulfur and our salt and our oil that others take from our state because we want to share in the resources of our state. So why should not these others share economically the same way? Another desired freedom is education that will release them from their ignorance. It is not that they cannot learn. They have had little or no opportunity. They have been kept in ignorance. And it is pathetic to see how Holland and Belgium and Portugal, for example, have kept their colonies in ignorance. England did establish schools and educate many of the people of their colonies. And fourth, they want a medical freedom that will release them from unnecessary suffering and pain and disease. In some parts of the world, 90% of the people die because no medical salvation is available. And while the situation improves, it is still deplorable. It has been my privilege to be in many countries of the world, and the two things I have heard most of desire for these people are two things: education, medicine. Two things our missionaries take first. But with all these desires, there is a more basic freedom they must have. Spiritual freedom that will liberate them from the superstitions of ages-old heathenism. And in reality, I believe that these first four desires can come only out of spiritual liberty. So much depends upon what we do with what we have, and so much of the disease and ignorance could be remedied with an unloosing of the spirit from the bondage of a fetishism. Freedom, however, is more than just an achievement of man. It is the gift of God, men endowed by their Creator. And like all gifts, though, we hold this freedom as a sacred trust, and any heritage brings an attendant responsibility. Greece, with its genius for culture, wanted it to be a Greek culture, and Greece died. But her culture lives in others as a foundation of our Western world. Rome, greatest among governors and lawgivers, most efficient empire builder, believed in justice, but only in Roman law, Roman government, Roman justice. Rome is dead. But the world moves on the highways of her law. Israel, with her genius of religious perception keener and higher than that of any other people, with an inborn capacity for God, yet she doomed herself in her own nationalism by keeping God a Jew, while God sent a universal Christ. And America? America, who brought her genius of democracy, liberty to think, to speak, to assemble, to worship, according to dictates of conscience? Ah, America, you have a stewardship of responsibility to see that all men are likewise free. And will America, as the others, have to die that others may share in her contribution to history? I pray not. This stewardship of freedom is more than a political responsibility. It is a religious obligation. Our founding fathers recognized that freedom is an unalienable right of man coming as his endowment of God. And it seems to me that we as Christians of all people would feel the responsibility most keenly. For one of the distinguishing marks of the Christian faith is release. Paul put it, the glorious liberty of the children of God. And again, for you were called to freedom, brethren. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for your lower nature. You should be free to serve each other in love. The contribution of Christian character, which comes from the inner transformation of a person's soul and the subsequent education and use of life, is important. When the Spirit of the Lord is in a person's life, there is liberty, and it is a self-determination conditioned by a love that feels the responsibility to serve others in this same love. Real, practicing Christianity has always done that, and it must do that today on the battlegrounds of our world, where people are eagerly waiting for any signs of assistance in their own struggle for liberation. And the reason why I say that spiritual freedom is basic to all other freedoms is twofold. First, where there has been spiritual deliverance, true religious liberty, other freedoms have been worked out. Wherever there is bondage of man's spiritual nature, he is in bondage in the other areas of his life. And one has but to look at this world to see this truth. And never let it be said that it makes no difference what a man believes so long as he is sincere, for all religions are pretty much the same. They are not the same. Second, the bondage of man's spirit, which we call sin. This is the greatest enslavement ever experienced. Man's greatest servitude, his bondage, is in servitude to himself, where he is enslaved by his own lust, in serfdom to his pride, prisoner of his selfishness, and in captivity to his greed. He is shut off from people because he has built around himself a narrow wall of exclusiveness. And he is shut out from his life all other people who are of a different economic status or of another social class, who belong to another race, or whose skin is another color. There is a misconception that freedom is an unrestrained license. And there are those who think that freedom is a liberty which removes all restraints, that freedom is the right to do as we please. But when freedom tempts us to interfere with the rights of others, it is no longer freedom. It is a new form of tyranny. Our freedom must be measured in terms of respect and responsibility to others. There is that sin, and we must speak of it as a basic threat. Said Jesus, "Truly, truly I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not continue in the house forever. The son continues forever. So if the son makes you free, you will be free indeed." Surely we ought to see this. We who are of the household of God, We can easily see how it is to fall victim in the bondage of sin, selfishness, greed, lust, envy, and the others. Our personal habits then are bound in the slavery of this sin, which stunts all other growth. Freedom is a matter of the spirit, and we can never have free nations until we have free people. The good news of the Christian gospel is that it offers release to individuals from the bondage of sin, and then these free persons have the responsibility of setting at liberty those who are in any other way captive. The history of Christianity is filled with the record of those who have resisted all efforts of enslavement, and they have remained free. Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, "If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." This is spiritual freedom, to believe in Jesus Christ and to continue in his teachings. Christianity aims then at freeing men from sin, from themselves, and such men will know that freedom is a sacred trust and that they are stewards of a great responsibility. Let's go back for just a moment to Michelangelo's prisoners. Those figures in stone waiting to be released, and contrast them with another bit of work from the same artist, the sculptor of Moses, considered a world masterpiece. That great statue of God's lawgiver to be seen in the Church of St. Peter in Chains in Rome, so that one standing in front of it feels almost as if he can hear Moses thundering from Sinai. It is so lifelike. Remember, that work too was once but a crude piece of rough marble, just like those in Florence. But Moses, imprisoned in that stone, was set free by the master artist, released from his bondage in all the dramatic creative genius of Michelangelo. But there is this inescapable fact: that figure of Moses remains cold, inanimate rock. There is beauty to thrill the eyes and the soul, but the life that vibrates must go back to the living Moses captured by God. The person held in that captivity of sin can likewise be released, for there is the master artist Jesus Christ waiting to set us free. We do not need to wait for someone to come along and cut us loose. Christ has already done that. And we can step forth from our shackles and out of our imprisonment as new creatures, for whenever a man comes to be in Christ, he is a new creation. What else could he be other than a new creation? The old things that have enslaved us have passed away, and in Jesus Christ all things have become new. That is the individual's need of freedom. It is a cutting loose from the bondage of sin. And this is our part in this as proclaimers of this good news of release to captives. As Jesus said in his first sermon, that was his responsibility. As his followers, it is ours. And then Paul adds another responsibility. How can they be saved, released, unless they hear? And how can they hear without a preacher? And how can they preach unless they be sent? This is where we come in, to enable them to hear, to go ourselves, and to help others go. There is a story told of a family visiting in New York. And one of the musts of a family visit to New York is to see the Statue of Liberty. And if you've ever seen it, especially as you come in from Europe toward it by ship, you will never forget that awe-inspiring symbol of freedom. There stands that Lady of Liberty with her torch of freedom held aloft, ablaze, lighting the way for those who would seek freedom on our shores. The visit impressed that family, particularly the little girl, And back in the hotel room that night, she persisted in wanting to go back right then. Finally, they got from her the reason. It's so dark out there. Someone ought to go out and help the lady hold up her light. And that's our world, in the bondage of darkness of sin. And we Christians have in our possession Christ, the light of the world. And as his followers, we are told that we too are lights of the world, and that our light is to shine. It's dark in today's world, and someone must hold up that light, proclaiming God's good news of release to captives. Let us pray.